They call it One Happy Island, but Aruba is more than sun-kissed beaches and cruise ship postcards. Beneath the resort, glamour lies a rugged desert heart, a vibrant blend of African, Arawakan, and Dutch legacies, and a people whose story defies every colonial stereotype. This is an island where cacti grow taller than streetlights, where Papiamento, a Creole born of survival, sings through every market stall and family kitchen, and where carnival isn't just a festival. It's resistance dressed in feathers and sequins. From the smoky aroma of grilled catch of the day at seaside dives to ancient petroglyphs tucked in caves older than empires, Aruba's soul demands more than a tourist's glance. So if you think you've heard it all, you haven't. Hit follow on your favorite platform and leave us a comment, because the next story might just change the way you see everything. Don't miss a single twisted turn. Chapter 1. The Desert Island with a Memory, Oranjestad, and the Desert Heartland, where visitors land in Oranjestad and think they've found a Dutch Caribbean utopia. Pastel facades trimmed with gingerbread woodwork, palm trees lining glossy shopping promenades, and boutique storefronts where diamonds and designer handbags gleam behind tempered glass. But the moment you leave the cruise ship terminal or cross beyond the manicured boundaries of the capital, the illusion shatters, not into ruin, but into something more raw, more ancient, more real. This is Aruba, not the Aruba of brochures and beachside bars, but the one where wind-sculpted cacti guard sacred hills and the dirt underfoot carries the imprint of enslaved labor, rebellious footfalls, and generations of survival. Drive 10 minutes inland, and the transformation is jarring. The landscape becomes parched, dust swirls like a whisper of the past. The divi-divi trees, always bent by wind like dancers frozen mid-spin, point unerringly west. They don't grow that way for style. They grow that way because Aruba was never made for luxury. It was made for endurance. At the heart of this resilient island lies Arikok National Park, a 34-square-kilometer expanse of volcanic rock, cactus plains, and limestone caves. It's here that the soul of Aruba whispers. Deep inside Fontaine Cave, under the calcium-streaked walls and fossil-rich ceilings, the Kakatiyo people left their memory etched in stone. Petroglyphs, spirals, animals, cryptic symbols, whisper a language lost to colonization, yet still alive in these ancestral sanctuaries. Aruban guides speak of the Kakatiyo with reverence. They never left, one tells me, tapping a glyph gently. They're here, watching how we care for their land. And indeed, standing in the thick silence of Guadiriquiri Cave, where two massive chambers are pierced by shafts of sunlight, it's hard not to feel their presence, like standing in the lungs of an ancient spirit that still breathes. Aruba's dry terrain, unlike the lushness of neighboring islands, helped preserve these sacred sites. The same dryness that stunted sugar plantations protected stories from being erased. Papiamento, the people's language. Walk the back streets of Santa Cruz or the bustling food stalls of Oranjestad, and you'll hear a song. Not one with notes and rhythm, but with language, Papiamento. It is Aruba's native tongue, a Creole born of African languages, Portuguese, Spanish, Dutch, and Arawakan roots. But it is not simply a language. It is an act of resistance. When Aruba fell under Dutch colonial rule, efforts were made to enforce Dutch as the language of schools, business, and governance. Papiamento, spoken mostly by the Afro-Aruban majority, was dismissed as slang, unfit for educated society. Children were once punished for using it in classrooms, but language has a way of surviving where laws fail. Papiamento is now one of Aruba's official languages. It is used in parliament, on radio stations, in courts, and in poetry. Its continued presence is a cultural act of reclamation. Words like dushi, sweetheart, bonbini, welcome, and mi tastima bo, I love you, aren't just greetings. They're affirmations of identity. In every syllable lies centuries of rebellion against erasure. As poet and activist Myra J. Webb once wrote, each Papiamento word is a map back to ourselves. Carnival, joy as resistance. No documentary of Aruba's culture would be complete without carnival. While many tourists imagine it as a Caribbean version of Mardi Gras, colourful costumes, loud music, parade floats, it is far more than that. Carnival in Aruba is a 6-week spiritual, social, and political event. It begins in early January with torchlight parades and reaches its peak in the Grand Parade by February. But in between are dozens of events, calypso competitions, steel band showcases, king and queen pageants, children's marches, and adult-only Jouvert jump-ups at dawn. To outsiders, it may seem like organized chaos. To locals, it is ritual, a reclaiming of space. The origins of carnival trace back to colonial days when enslaved Africans were forbidden from assembling. Once a year, around Lent, they were given permission to celebrate under European supervision. They danced, sang, and masked their masters in parody, mimicking their clothes, speech, and pompousness. It was satire with a beat, a mockery of power that could only be expressed through metaphor, costume, and rhythm. Today, those roots remain. Modern carnival costumes are extravagant, handmade marvels that can take months to complete. Dancers in feathered headdresses, sequined bodysuits, and towering boots march through town, each costume more symbolic than decorative. Some represent ancestral spirits, others depict social issues, environmental change, political critique, identity affirmation. For the working class, carnival is catharsis. For artists, it is protest. For the island, it is memory in motion. Culinary resistance, from cactus to cheese. If language is identity and carnival is spirit, then food is Aruba's story told through taste. Real Aruban cuisine is not plated for Instagram. It's not minimal, nor trendy. It is hearty, communal, and often born of scarcity. At its center is survival, how to feed a family in a desert surrounded by salt water. One of the most iconic dishes is sopi di kadushi, cactus soup. The kadushi cactus must first be stripped of its sharp spines, peeled and chopped. It's boiled with goat meat, onions, peppers, and local herbs to create a thick, almost medicinal stew. Locals claim it cures hangovers, heartbreak, and the flu. Then there's keshiyena, a dish born in slavery. Enslaved people were given cheese rinds and scraps. They hollowed out large balls of Edam cheese, stuffed them with shredded meats, olives, raisins, capers, and spices, then baked the whole thing into a molten, savory feast. What began as leftovers is now a national treasure served at weddings and carnival feasts. Fish is central too. Not sushi or fillets, but whole fish, grilled on driftwood fires by roadside vendors. Red snapper, lionfish, mahi-mahi, fried plantains, funchi, cornmeal, and pickled onions often accompany the dish. And don't forget pastichi, fried pastries stuffed with cheese, meat, or tuna. You'll find them in every corner store, gas station, and school lunchbox. The food is not just nourishment, it's heritage. Every bite is a story of forced migration, cultural fusion, and island ingenuity. Chapter 2, Salt Struggle and the Sea's Memory. San Nicolas, the soul beyond the capital. San Nicolas isn't just Aruba's second city, it's the one that remembers. Where Oranjestad leans into colonial charm and tourist polish, San Nicolas stands defiant and proud, its streets steeped in Afro-Caribbean heritage, oral tradition, and unvarnished resilience. Once an oil refinery boomtown, it now beats with a cultural pulse that is louder, rawer, and infinitely more human. Walk through its narrow lanes and you'll see it on the walls, massive murals that tower over you like gods of memory. Faces of Aruban elders, mythic carnival queens, fishermen, and musicians blaze in technicolor. The Aruba Art Fair has transformed abandoned buildings into sacred spaces. These aren't just art pieces. They're street sermons, paintings that speak, walls that weep, canvases that challenge erasure. Step inside Charlie's bar, and history slaps you in the face. License plates from the world, vintage maps, fishing gear, photos of refinery workers, and handwritten notes in a dozen languages coat every surface like layers of cultural sediment. Locals sit elbow to elbow with Dutch expats, sipping rum and retelling legends of a town that refused to vanish after the refinery shut down. The oil is gone. The culture remains. Largo and the oil boom that built and broke San Nicolas. In 1924, the American-owned Largo Oil and Transport Company established a massive refinery in San Nicolas, altering the trajectory of the island forever. Men from across the Caribbean, Trinidad, Barbados, St. Lucia, and beyond, arrived seeking work. So did engineers from Venezuela and white executives from the United States. For decades, the refinery was Aruba's economic engine, but it was also its great divider. The town grew fast and unevenly. Black and brown laborers were relegated to the outskirts or cramped barracks. The American white class lived in the gated colony of Largo Heights, complete with tennis courts, golf courses, and private schools. Behind high fences, they lived in air-conditioned homes with imported goods, while just outside, Afro-Caribbean families worked in the heat, raise children in crowded conditions, and preserve their culture in spite of systemic barriers. When the refinery shut down in 1985, and again after a brief reopening, San Nicolas was gutted. Thousands lost work, many left. But those who remained did something quietly radical. They turned loss into expression. San Nicolas became the cultural lung of Aruba, and each breath of its present is laced with the labor, sweat, and music of its past. Slavery's shadow and ancestral memory. Aruba's historical narrative often positions itself as better off than plantation-heavy islands like Jamaica or Haiti, due to its arid climate and smaller-scale slavery. But this framing erases more than it reveals. Slavery did exist here. And its legacy lingers, not in plantation ruins, but in surnames, in songs, in whispered silences. Enslaved Africans were brought to Aruba to work as domestic servants, salt gatherers, dock loaders, and fishermen. Unlike other colonies, they lived close to their owners, creating a culture of quiet resistance through food, family, and faith. In Rancho, one of Orangistad's oldest Afro-Aruban communities, oral historians trace their lineage through matriarchs who never owned land, but knew every herb for healing and every hymn for mourning. They passed down recipes, midwifery skills, funeral chants. They speak of ancestors who came on boats but left blessings. Few official monuments exist to this enslaved past. But memory persists in places like St. Teresa's Church, where African rhythms infuse Catholic hymns, or in funerals where Papiamento laments carry names not found in Dutch records. The absence of monuments does not mean the absence of memory. In Aruba, remembrance lives in the body, in ritual, and in the land. Brewer. The quiet power beneath Aruba's spiritual world is layered, Catholic on the surface, but underneath simmers a Caribbean blend of Yoruba traditions, ancestral reverence, and folk healing known as brewer. Often misunderstood, brewer is not voodoo, nor is it some Hollywood fantasy of curses and dolls. It is, at its core, a healing tradition passed quietly through generations, usually by women, often in secret. In San Nicolas and the hills around Santa Cruz, you'll find homes with hidden altars. Candles burn for Orisha spirits, Catholic saints, and long-gone relatives. Baths are drawn with basil, rue, and sea salt to cleanse heartbreak or illness. Prayer is spoken in a hybrid of tongues, and nothing is done without intention. Ask directly, and many Arubans will deny practicing it. But the signs are everywhere. Dried herbs hanging in doorways. Stories about the woman who can fix things. Hushed visits after dark. Brewer was criminalized under colonial Dutch law well into the 20th century. It survived anyway. It remains a spiritual code of the oppressed. A system of power for people who historically had none. Fishermen, salt, and the ocean's memory Aruba is an island, but not a beachy cliché. Its relationship with the sea is intimate, complicated, and often painful. For centuries, fishing was survival. Families relied on the sea not just for food, but for medicine, weather signs, and spiritual direction. Children learned to swim not in pools, but by being tossed into the surf and told to kick. In coastal towns like Savaneta and Malmok, old fishermen sit on overturned boats, mending nets with hands aged by salt. They remember the days before tourism, before imported fish, before the sea was commodified. They tell stories of shark sightings, miraculous catches, and friends lost to rogue waves. They speak of salt as sacrifice, how it preserved meat, how it chafed their backs, how it always seemed to take as much as it gave. These stories aren't recorded in books. They're sung in calypso, recounted over domino games, or passed to grandchildren under starlit skies. Some say Aruba's true memory is in the sea, that the water carries every forgotten name, every lost boat, every unspoken goodbye. And when you listen to it, really listen, you'll hear that the waves aren't just breaking, they're whispering. Today's struggles, tomorrow's hope. Modern Aruba wrestles with identity like any post-colonial nation. Tourism brings revenue, but dilutes culture. Cruise ships dock with thousands of passengers who rarely see beyond the bars of Palm Beach. Mega resorts sprawl where turtle nests once hatched. Young Arubans speak more Dutch or English than Papiamento. Some elders worry the island is losing its voice. And yet, there is hope. Artists in San Nicolas paint their rebellion. Chefs in Santa Cruz revive old recipes. Musicians blend steel pan with spoken word poetry. School teachers teach history with a decolonized lens. Carnival designers embed political critique into costumes. Elders document their lives for podcasts and oral history archives. The island breathes. It remembers. It resists. Because Aruba is not a product. It is a people. A place of sun and shadow, song and salt, loss and joy. And its story, told fully, fiercely, truthfully, is just beginning.